The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you live from CenturyLink Field. But more importantly, is Ursula still alive? Back in the studio there?
I am. My goodness. I felt like something getting stuck in my throat.
I felt guilty that I wasn't there to Heimlich you or something.
I didn't know what to do.
I'm fine. I just told...
And then you didn't do your lockout to your newscast.
I know. You know,
I'm thinking, what in the world is happening back
there?
Okay,
can I tell you the truth?
Yes.
Nicole got us an amazing lunch.
Uh-huh.
And I made the mistake of taking a bite before the newscast.
I've been guilty of that once or twice
myself.
Goodness
gracious. Okay. So good, though.
I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
Yes.
That was my absolute top priority as I begin the show today.
Thank you.
Okay, that's good to know. Welcome to the big show. We are live at CenturyLink Field, where a little more than 5 hours from now, the eyes of the nation will be on the turf here as your Seattle Seahawks take on the Green Bay Packers in what is a critically important game for both teams, because they're both kind of teetering on the brink right now of the playoffs, and there's a sense of urgency for both teams. Now, the good thing is the Packers have won every one or tied every game at home, and they've lost every road game this year. So the Seahawks have a huge home field advantage. It's a critical game. We'll tell you all about that a little bit later this afternoon. I'm going to do our regular Dory Monson show from now till 2 o'clock. And then starting at 2, I'll be joined by Paul Moyer, Jordan Babineau, Ray Roberts, Michael Bumpus, and we will begin our Seahawks pregame coverage here at CenturyLink Field. So we have a full afternoon, and then we'll be with you at halftime. We'll be with you for the post game. So the next 12 hours or so, except for those annoying times when Steve Rabel and Dave Wyman will interrupt me with the play-by-play of the broadcast, we'll be with you till about midnight tonight here. So glad you're along, and let's get right into the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I wasn't here yesterday. I know that on Tuesday when I was on the air, I talked about Amazon splitting off into New York City and suburban D.C. Yesterday, the backlash started to grow. And as I told you on Tuesday, I don't understand Amazon going from the city of Kashama-Sawant to the borough of Alexandria Cortez-Ocasio. Because you're going from one socialist whack job to maybe an even bigger whack job. Somebody who certainly has almost no real life experience. And so their new congresswoman-elect has started ginning up as much outrage as possible. And it's working, because there is such backlash against Amazon right now in New York City. And there's conflicting numbers here. But it sounds like New York City is going to, in tax breaks, be giving Amazon somewhere between $48,000 and $62,000 per job that Amazon's bringing to town. And as our news partners at Cairo 7 put it,
this deal stinks.
This is ridiculous.
And people are very upset. Here, the wacko socialist, Kashama Sawant, she said that anytime government climbs into bed with a corporation, they don't care about the people.
What our movement has learned in Seattle is, hands down, corporate politicians are not on your side.
Okay, now, slight irony there, because even more hands down, politicians are not on your side. So when somebody like Sawant, who cares about no human being on earth other than Sawant, to hear her say that corporations don't care about you, well, of course they don't. But for her to suggest that somehow a politician does, of course they don't. That is an equally ludicrous assertion by her. Now, the Democrats who put this together in New York City, like their mayor, Bill de Blasio.
It's a great day.
Nope. Is that all de Blasio had to say? Is that it?
It's a great day for New York City. It's an extraordinary day for Queens.
Okay. New Yorkers had very mixed opinions about this.
Crystal City is going to be flush with a big boatload of cash.
More money to fix infrastructure, hopefully build better schools.
I don't want people to be priced out of the area.
If you want to come to our community, give to the community. And the best thing you could do is give some people a job.
Well, they will. and maybe they won't be. I mean, I don't know that a lot of people in Queens are going to get six-figure tech jobs, but will there be more jobs? They're bringing in 25,000 Amazon jobs. Will there be more than 25,000 ancillary jobs? Restaurants, bars, food service, Uber drivers, all the rest. Yeah. So people are going to benefit from this. But, man, you listen to politicians like New York State Senator Mike Gianaris.
We are here to say to Amazon, take that welcome mat that was rolled out for you yesterday, put it back in the package it came in, and send it back to Seattle where it belongs.
Yeah!
They do not want Amazon in NYC.
The subways are in crisis. We don't have enough public school seats. The rents are going through the roof in Long Island City. And just yesterday, just because this deal was announced, the predatory speculators came to town and started buying up apartments by text message without even seeing the apartment.
Yes, they do that sort of thing. Just like Sound Transit sold out to developers and gave them siting for the Sound Transit lines so they could make hundreds of millions of dollars here in Seattle, because that's what sleazy politicians do. And so all these politicians acting like they care about people. Never, never do politicians care about people. Politicians care about politicians. Now, they don't even care about other politicians. Politicians care about themselves. Corporations care about themselves. So let's talk about this. And I would love to get your thoughts on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. But this is a lot like what happens when a sports franchise threatens to move or does move to another city. They sell themselves to the highest bidder. The Mariners, they were able to leverage the what used to be Safeco Field. Now I just heard maybe T-Mobile. I don't know. The Mariners were able to leverage that because they were threatening to move. The Seahawks, they were in Anaheim when Paul Allen came aboard, and Paul Allen said, well, keep the team in Seattle if the people vote for a new stadium. And sports teams do this all the time. Why wouldn't a corporation do the same thing? Of course they're going to do that. Amazon's business is not social services, and it's not charity. It's the bottom line. And in fact, if you're on that board of directors, that's your fiduciary responsibility, your shareholders. It's not what these politicians are yapping about. So Amazon did what companies like that do, and that is we're going to try to leverage as much money for our company as possible. Now, is that sick? On many levels, yes. When you have the most profitable company in the history of humankind, and when they're saying, we'll come to your city if you give us billions in tax breaks, and New York and Virginia combined are giving Amazon about $2 billion. Is that sick? Yeah, on a very superficial level, it is. But it's also business. And it's just not any different from what any other company would do if they had that kind of power and they could guarantee to bring that many jobs and has that kind of leverage. Every business deal is ultimately about leverage. And when you have 50,000 jobs you can deliver, well, I can see why the Democrats who run New York City, New York State, Bill de Blasio, Governor Cuomo, I can see why they'd want to say, yeah, we'll give you $1 billion. You come and create all these jobs here. Bring in so many state income taxes, all of that. One of the things that was hilarious is Cuomo, their governor, said, well, the reason we had to give Amazon all of these tax breaks is because they wouldn't have come here otherwise because our state income tax is so high. Talk about a self-defeating message that we got to give the most wealthy corporation in the world huge tax breaks because our taxes are so high on the little bodega in Brooklyn that sells coffee. And does it suck if you're the little business owner, the mom and pop, the single proprietor, and you don't have any leverage and you don't have any kinds of mediators between you and government? Does it suck for those people? Yeah, it does. But what's the better solution here? to say that companies are not allowed to move, or if they move, they're not allowed to get the best deal, because we're in a competitive world. And the way cities, states can compete is by offering the best tax deal. And so all this complaining about Amazon, it strikes me as ridiculous. It's politicians who are just yapping so they can blow some hot air, pretending that they care about people. It's Amazon leveraging its business power in the most powerful way imaginable, and that's to secure as much money as they can get. It's government entities saying, ultimately, if we give them $1 billion in tax breaks and they return $2 billion in income taxes and other tax, sales taxes, then we win. Does it suck for those of us who don't have that kind of power, who don't have lobbyists? Sure, it does. But show me a system that would be better. And to say that you cannot leverage your position and your power, would you want that for yourself as an individual? If you had a job that was in very high demand, if you were one of the high-tech workers that Amazon goes after, would you want to say that Google can't compete in Kansas City with Amazon in Seattle for your services, for the most money you can get out of it? Of course you don't want that. So don't restrict that for companies. It's just a lot of hot air by a lot of politicians here. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
Oh, let's talk about what politics is really all about in our region and elsewhere. So in Seattle, they have these NAV teams that go out, they meet with the homeless, and they offer them services. They say, hey, can we get you into drug treatment? Can we get you into a tiny apartment? Can we get you mental health counseling? It is critical if we want to actually turn people's lives around. Well, the Seattle City Council has just cut the navigation team significantly. The reason? Because people like Kashama Sawant, people like Teresa Mosqueda, they want as many people on the streets in distress as possible. People like Mike O'Brien. Why would they want that? Well, I've told you over the years. I'll reinstate it in just a moment here. But here's the NAV team vote with Mike O'Brien.
By supporting this measure going forward, I want to be clear that I'm still supporting what will ultimately be over $1.5 million expansion of the navigation team, and the majority of that going to outreach and cleanup crews.
What? So let's be clear on what they just voted for. They voted to cut the staff of the NAV team, cut the budget of the NAV team about in half. $480,000 in 2019 to $244,000 in 2020. They are going to cut many of the NAV team workers who are out on the street. And Mike O'Brien says, just because I'm voting to cut the NAV team dramatically doesn't mean that I don't support growing the NAV team. Listen, I got to play this again, because as he went from Clyde Hill to Lakeside to Duke, I'm thinking maybe the synapses connected at some point in this man's life, but now the disconnect is pretty amazing. So he just voted to cut the budget for the navigation team, and he said what?
By supporting this measure going forward, I want to be clear that I'm still supporting what will ultimately be over $1.5 million expansion of the navigation team, and the majority of that going to outreach and cleanup crews.
Okay, so by voting to cut the NAV team, that is supporting increasing the navigation team. I tell you what, man, this guy is so far out there now. So why would government want to have more people addicted to heroin sleeping on the streets? Because that is power. That's how you can tell people there's a visible problem, you want to fix it, give us more tax dollars. Let me give you another example of that. Have you heard what's happening in Kansas City right now? In KC Mo, There was a volunteer organization that for 3 years now has gone out on the streets, and they make sandwiches, homemade chili and soup. They hand it out in parks to vagrants in the city. And the Kansas City Health Department swept in last week, and as they were setting up to pass out food that they've made, and by the way, the group is called Free Hot Soup KC. They say that permits have never been required, that they have never had a problem in years that they've been doing this. But the Kansas City government came out and they poured bleach in the soup. They sprayed chemicals on the sandwiches that this group made. Here's a volunteer for Hot Soup KC.
The food that they poured bleach on is just chilling here at the park. Open. Reeks of bleach. Got donuts in there and sandwiches. And we had our friend Judy over here take some of the sandwiches. So they're really concerned about public health. They come back and pick up the food that they ruined of ours, that they're just leaving for the houseless community here to pick through.
Okay, so the question then becomes, why in Seattle would they cut positions of people that are designed to get the drug vagrants off the streets? Why in Kansas City would they pour bleach on the food that volunteers for years have given to the starving and the homeless there? It, as always, I don't know if I've ever had a better example of what I've been telling you for more than 20 years. It is about money. Homelessness is a gigantic industry. Homelessness is a cash cow for government. And the more drug vagrants there are on the streets, the more government can say, you got to give us more tax dollars. And with those tax dollars, do they change lives? Do they save lives? No. They hire cronies who have six-figure jobs. I mean, these groups in Seattle that supposedly work with the homelessness, the salaries, that Lee woman who makes $180,000 a year, the guy who runs all of the tent cities who makes six figures, it's business. They do not care about drug vagrants. They do not care about lives lost to the spiral of drugs. They do not care about humanity. They care about six-figure jobs for their cronies. Homelessness, and please, if there's any message that I can get across to people around here, homelessness is a huge cash cow business for government. And when you hear people like Mike O'Brien talking about cutting the people who work directly with the most desperate because he wants to help the people who are most desperate, it's about money and business. That's how you go from Clyde Hill to Lakeside to Duke. Mike O'Brien knows the formula. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Lots more to do as we continue from CenturyLink Field. That lumber company that burned down last weekend. I thought I heard the owner of the place say that they want to rebuild in Seattle. Why would anybody want to rebuild a business in Seattle, given that it was likely homeless vagrants that burned down his place to begin with? So I'll ask him that question and much more next, as we continue from CenturyLink here on the Dory Monson Show. It was the biggest fire in Seattle in more than 8 years, a four-alarm blaze that took down Gascoigne Lumber on North Queen Anne down the Ship Canal there. And we found out yesterday, 2 days ago, that it was arson, according to investigators. So what's the future with all of these horrible things that are happening? There was another arson at the Elks Lodge that was not that far away. I talked to the executive director there. The owner of Gascoigne Lumber is Dave Gascoigne, who joins us here on Cairo Radio. Dave, good to talk to you.
Hi. Thanks, Dory. Yeah, and just to clarify, the owner is actually my father, Rob. And, you know, potentially I'm looking at future ownership here.
Okay, so, right.
Bright future ahead, though.
Glad you clarified that. So take me back. This has been in your family for how long, Dave?
Well, my grandfather purchased the company from Feely Lawler, which was also a lumber yard, back in 1959, I believe, is the date that he actually purchased the company. And it followed through the years until my grandfather's retirement, when my father actually took ownership partway through and has owned it up until now. And so it's continued to be in the name. And with Tom is currently our president, and he is has been purchasing into the company and is an owner. You could consider him an owner too.
Yeah.
And, along with my uncle Buzz.
Okay, got it. So when it's something that's been part of your family's heritage for longer than I've been alive, and I'm getting up there now, it had to have been just incredibly heartbreaking when you got the news in the middle of the night. Tell me about that.
Well, it's really been hard to describe that to people. People keep going, well, what did that make you feel? And that's a whirlwind of different feelings. And, you know, obviously it was awe-striking. I couldn't process the information when I first heard, hey, Dave, your warehouses are completely engulfed. I made him say it about five times, and I had to see a picture, because it just doesn't, you know, how does that compute?
Right.
It doesn't.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine. So then you went down there, I'm sure, right?
Oh, immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm asking questions like, first of all, can we put it out? No, actually, my first question, is everybody safe? Yes, everybody is safe. Good. Can we put it out? No, it's fully engulfed. Okay, I got to go, and I'm going to contact all the main players of the company, and I'm on the way to I guess, just watch it burn to the ground.
Yeah, yep. Well, and so when did you assume right away? I know that they made the definitive declaration a couple of days ago. Did you assume it was arson?
As soon as I knew from the main detective there that's the head of the arson, and they said, yes, we have the evidence. And he told me this prior to the releasement of the statement, that it was where the fire had taken place. I immediately knew it had to have been either an accidental fire or a purposely caused fire, whatever, however you define arson. Absolutely, it didn't cross my mind that it would be anything else.
So I know that business owners have a special connectivity with their neighborhood, and you know what's going on in your neighborhood as well as anybody. So do you have a sense of who might be behind it?
People keep asking about who do you think the arson is and what do you think about him. My thoughts have actually not been based very much towards the arson. I haven't had time to even give him thought. I've been more or less thinking about what we're doing to move forward. But if you were to ask me right now, my assumption would be some mentally deranged person of some sort that gets pleasure in watching hardworking man's heritage burn down in front of him. Somebody that's strange.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who sadly fall into that category in your neighborhood and a lot of other neighborhoods in Seattle. And, you know, I know the Elks Lodge. I talked to the guys there, and they told me they told me I was a door just covered with gasoline that was put against their structure, and somebody wanted to burn that down. Do you think they're connected at all?
Well, it is fairly odd, because I knew nothing of those fires until our fire had happened, because, you know, I before this even happened, we're at full tilt with, you know, getting our business underway. And so after this fire happened, everybody's going, hey, what about the Elks Lodge? And what about this? And I'm going, wait, let me check on the news. And so I'm meeting with the lady from Cairo to go do an interview. And she says, go over to the Elks Lodge. I don't even know where that is. And then once I show up, I realize it's less than a quarter of a mile away. It's on the same side of the canal. And there's another fire, an insurance company directly across the street from it. And once I see that it's Ponte Seafood, I go, oh, well, yeah, Ponte Seafood's been there as long as I've been commuting to work, which has been pretty much my whole life.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a shame. That's absolutely a shame. And it doesn't seem, I mean, how can you say that's not unconnected? I'm not the forensic, but it sure looks connected to me.
Well, and I said on my show, I almost hope they are connected, because if they're not, then we have twice as many dangerous, crazy people running around.
Oh, right. Yeah, you would hope that you could confine the situation as much as possible. So if it's one guy, let's just stop him and get this over with.
So you guys are going to rebuild there?
No, we're not rebuilding here. Unfortunately, this building is literally grandfathered in by definition. And so we can't rebuild here in this place. But it's actually, you could call it a blessing in disguise. We were potentially looking to move in the near future anyways. And we found a place where we can do so that would service all of our customers. And now it's going to, hopefully, with the great insurance policy that my father, who's a good businessman, set up, that we pay towards, monthly, is going to take care of us. I would sure hope so.
Sure. Are you going to stay in the city?
Yes. Yeah. We're picking the epicenter right now so that we can service all the existing customers.
Yeah, and I know that's a big I know the guys at Limbach Lumber a little bit, and I know that when you have you've established a clientele over your lifetime, I know that you can't just pack up and move away. Was there any part of you that thought, man, things might be a little too crazy in Seattle now, and we could rebuild anywhere?
I would hate to speak badly of the city that I was raised in, but I think the entire staff and ownership of this company is rejoicing that we have the option to get out of this city, which happens to be, in terms of expression, is up in flames itself.
Yeah. Now, I know what you mean. Look, it breaks my heart, Dave. I was born and raised in Ballard, and I've watched what has happened with a very heavy heart. And for people like you, the business owners, the job creators, the tax providers, I'm always sick when I see that this impacts, good people like your business. But I'm glad to know that you're going to be able to, like the phoenix, rise from the ashes here.
All right. Well, it's a continual, seems to be a continual theme here throughout the ages that, it's a God thing. Because we just continue to be blessed here, and it's great to be a part of that.
Good for you. All right. Well, look, I wish you the very best going forward and rebuilding from this. I'm sorry this happened to you and your workers and everyone else, but I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today, Dave.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Okay. Dave Gascoigne, Gascoigne Lumber, they will rebuild somewhere in this crazy city, but these are crazy times around here. That is for certain. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead as we continue from CenturyLink Field in advance of the Seahawks and the Packers on Thursday Night Football. The Dory Monson Show rolls on. Rolling through the afternoon here at CenturyLink Field, where the Seahawks are hosting the Green Bay Packers tonight. The whole nation will be watching on Thursday Night Football. Primetime game. Seahawks have done really well in primetime. And, man, I tell you, they need a win, the Seahawks do, to keep their playoff hopes alive this season. So we'll have our pregame show coverage beginning a little over an hour from now, 2 o'clock. Paul Moyer, Jordan Babineau, Michael Bumpus, and Ray Roberts will join me, and we will count you down to kickoff between the Seahawks and the Packers. Meanwhile, between now and then, we're covering all the news that's fit to talk about, including, it looks like, that $30 car tab initiative that Tim Iman's been pushing for, but more importantly, that tens of thousands of people have signed initiative ballot gathering for. Looks like it's going to be on the ballot. And as you know, Sound Transit, the most criminal public agency in the history of the United States of America, the company, the business, the entity that takes the value of your vehicle, the actual value, jacks it through the roof to an illegally calculated value, and then taxes you on that illegal valuation. Well, that is a push to get the car tabs back to $30. Tim Iman talked to Channel 4, ComoNews.com, about how many times the voters have said, we want $30 tabs.
How many times have we heard over the last 20 years, whatever happened to our $30 car tabs?
In fact, 20 years ago, the people of this state said yes.
This has been a 20-year tug of war.
And so if this passes, it looks like they got enough signatures by the deadline yesterday to get it on the ballot. So if this passes, Sound Transit, for the first time in the history of the agency, is going to have to deal with just a couple fewer
of our tax dollars.
They're going to have to basically prioritize their spending.
Okay, so the Senate Transportation Commission chair, Steve Hobbs, he has a very different way of looking at this. Sound Transit should be able to continue to illegally calculate our cars' values, to illegally collect tax dollars from us, because it would hurt them if they don't do this.
It would probably devastate Sound Transit's projects.
Can you believe that? A state senator, I'm going to try to get him on the show, but he's afraid that if Sound Transit can't continue to value our cars way above market value so that they can overtax us, that that will hurt Sound Transit if that gets reined in. And if you ever needed yet another example of how politicians are in it for themselves and not for you and me, all you have to do is listen to guys like this, Steve Hobbs, who prioritizes Sound Transit. Look, they locked up every big law firm in the region. Their lobbyists have locked up every politician. They've put all these little suburban mayors on their board, so they'll rubber stamp everything they do, even if it destroys the fabric of a community. And yet you have senators who will defend Sound Transit before they defend the taxpayers who are getting ripped off.
Some people have been hit pretty hard on it, but on the other, it was a voter-approved effort, and we have to make sure that these projects are still going to be paid for and they're going to arrive on time.
Like, let me listen to the beginning of that one again.
Some people have been hit pretty hard on it, but on the other, it was a voter-approved effort.
Some people have been hit pretty hard. Yeah, like my daughters who are in their 20s and have car tab bills in hundreds of dollars for the old used vehicles that they've driven since college. And they got to pay that now on their, you know, entry-level job salary. And believe me, there are a lot of people, you know, poor, the working class of our region, who are getting ripped off. And a state senator, some people are getting hit pretty hard. They're getting hit hard because it's illegally calculated. Because they're ripping everybody off. Dan Wiles talked to Channel 4, ComoNews.com. And he said, the current car tab prices are way too much.
That's way too much.
Yeah, but he said, what if we find a middle ground?
I mean, it's got a little more to think about. There's got to be a middle ground, you know what I mean? There's something we can work out.
A middle ground with Sound Transit? Something we can work out with Sound Transit? You don't negotiate with terrorists. So, no, there's no middle ground. There's total, complete victory if you can strip the car tabs back down to $30, which is what they should be, what the voters of the state repeatedly have said they wanted, a middle ground with Sound Transit. Oh, yeah, they've done a great job of meeting us in the middle. Bunch of crooks. And our Fast 15 is coming up next.